Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod, second only to Lord Vishnu, is self-sufficient. Although he has nothing to aspire for in the material world, for the benefit of those in the material world, he is always busily engaged everywhere and is accompanied by his dangerous energies like Goddess Kali and Goddess Durga. Lord Shiva is known as the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is known as the best of all types of Vaishnavas, Vaishnavanam Yadashambhu. Consequently, Lord Shiva has a Vaishnava Sampradaya, the disciplic succession known as the Rudra Sampradaya. Just as there is a Brahma Sampradaya coming directly from Lord Brahma, the Rudra Sampradaya comes directly from Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is one of the 12 great personalities as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.20. Swayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumaro Kapalu Manu Pradu Janaku Vishmo Bali Vyasaki Vayam. There are 12 great authorities in preaching God consciousness. The name Shambhu means Lord Shiva. His disciplic succession is also known as the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, and the current Vishnu Swami Sampradaya is known as the Vallabha Sampradaya. The current Brahma Sampradaya is known as the Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. Even though Lord Shiva appeared to preach Mayavad philosophy at the end of his pastime in the form of Sankaracharya, he preached the Vaishnava philosophy. Bhajagovindam, 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 Nidamate. He stressed worshipping Lord Krishna or Govindam 3 times in this verse, and especially warned his followers that they could not possibly achieve deliverance or mukti simply by word jugglery and grammatical puzzles. If one is actually serious to attain mukti, he must worship Lord Krishna. This is Sripad Sankaracharya's last instruction. Here it is mentioned that Lord Shiva is always accompanied by his material energy, Shakti Bhumiya. Material energy, Goddess Durga or Goddess Kali, is always under his control. Goddess Kali and Durga serve him by killing only asuras and demons. Sometimes Kali becomes so infuriated that she indiscriminately kills all kinds of asuras. There is a popular picture of Goddess Kali in which she wears a garland composed of the heads of the asuras and holds in her left hand a captured head and in her right hand a great katka or chopper for killing asuras. Great wars are symbolic representations of Kali's devastation of the asuras and are actually conducted by the Goddess Kali. Sisti Stiti Pralaya Salana Shakti Reha. Ram Samhita 544. Asuras try to pacify the Goddess Kali or Durga by worshipping her in material opulence. But when the asuras become too intolerable, Goddess Kali does not discriminate in killing them wholesale. Asuras do not know the secret of the energy of Lord Shiva. They prefer to worship Goddess Kali or Durga or Lord Shiva for material benefit. Due to their demoniac character, they are reluctant to surrender to Lord Krishna, as indicated by Bhagavad Gita 7.15. Namam duskutina mudapa kalite naradama maya parityana asura bhava sritaha. Lord Shiva's duty is very dangerous because he has to employ the energy of Goddess Kali or Durga. In another popular picture, the Goddess Kali is sometimes seen standing on the prostrate body of Lord Shiva, which indicates that sometimes Lord Shiva has to fall down flat in order to stop Goddess Kali from killing the asuras. Since Lord Shiva controls the material energy, Goddess Durga, worshippers of Lord Shiva attain very opulent positions within this material world. Under Lord Shiva's direction, a worshipper of Lord Shiva gets all kinds of material facilities. In contrast, a Vaishnava, a worshipper of Lord Vishnu, gradually becomes poorer in material possessions because Lord Vishnu doesn't trick his devotees into becoming materially entangled by possessions. Lord Vishnu gives his devotees intelligence from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Tesam sadhate yuktanam bhajatam priti guru vakam tadami guru yogam tam yenamam ubiyanti te. Those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Thus, Lord Vishnu gives intelligence to his devotees, so that the devotee can make progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. Since the devotee has nothing to do with any kind of material possession, he does not come under the control of Goddess Kali or the Goddess Durga. Lord Shiva is also in charge of the Tamaguna, or the mode of ignorance in this material world. His potency, the goddess Durga, is described as keeping all living entities in the darkness of ignorance. Yadevi, Sarvabhutasam Nidra Rupa Samsita. Both Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are incarnations of Lord Vishnu. But Lord Brahma is in charge of the creation, whereas Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction, which he carries out with the help of his material energy, Goddess Kali or Goddess Durga. Thus in this verse, Lord Shiva is described as being accompanied by dangerous potencies, Shakta Gauraya, and that is the actual position of Lord Shiva. Om Agyana Dhinandasya Yandra Salakya Shakchuram Yitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudena Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stakitam Yen Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. First of all, we can appreciate that there is an order in the universe and that the Supreme Lord has his agents throughout the universe. And therefore, that we are simply captured within an intricate arrangement. And that this intricate arrangement is going on within a greater plan. And meanwhile, we ourselves are making our own smaller plans. And these smaller plans, they mean a lot to us. We become very much emotionally involved with all that we want to do, desire to do, cannot do, and all the things that we would desire that would happen, and so on. But the fact of the matter is that our own little arrangements are not that significant. Sometimes I give the example of the ant's dream. Ants have a big agenda, right? Undoubtedly. They are really driven, very much so, because an ant is never seen taking a holiday. There's no such thing as ants lying comfortably on the beach. Ants are working 24 hours a day, and in other words, it must be extremely important to them. Extremely important. Whatever they're doing must really mean a lot. Therefore, I call it an ant's dream. To us, what's the meaning of it? The ant is so concerned, carrying a little lump from one side to another. We are looking at, like, what are you doing down there, little creature? In the same way, we can appreciate that the demigods are looking down upon us. What are you all doing down there, little creatures? So, upon hearing these kind of descriptions about Lord Shiva and about his energies, Durga Devi, or the more angry form of Durga Devi, Goddess Kali, then we appreciate how much we are controlled, actually, by these external material arrangements of the Supreme Lord, by the various agents that control these arrangements, and that we are like, Srila Prabhupada explained it in another way, and said, just like in the game of football, we think that we are the players, but in reality, we are the ball. This is also an interesting point. We are the ball. We have not so often considered ourselves the ball, but Prabhupada said, you can be kicked any moment. You can be kicked any moment. You can be kicked right out of this body any moment. In this way, we can look upon our life. Lord Shiva is therefore, in one way, an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Lord Shiva is described like that. We can see in Shiva Tattva that actually Lord Sadashiva is the original Shiva, who is a direct expansion of Sankarshan, and Sankarshan is a manifestation of Lord Shiva, of Lord Vishnu, and thus Lord Sadashiva is also counted within the category of Vishnu Tattva. In the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, the mystery of Shiva Tattva is nicely explained. And there it is said, the material world and the spiritual world are separated by the Viraja River. And it's said that on either side of the Viraja River is there an abode of Lord Shiva. On the material side is Mount Kailash, which previously was the abode of the treasurer of the demigods, Kuvira, who is a great devotee of Lord Shiva, and therefore offered this Kailash to Lord Shiva. And there it is said the demigod Shiva is residing. On the spiritual side of the Viraja River is also an abode of Lord Shiva. In the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, it is called Shiva Loka. And in this abode, Lord Sadashiva is residing, who is the expansion of Lord Vishnu. So it is said, therefore, Ksiram Yata Adi Vikara Vishesa Yogat, just as from milk, when some agent is added, the milk can transform into yogurt. In the same way, from Lord Sadashiva, a transformation can come about once the interaction begins with the material nature, and then the demigod Shiva, Rudra, becomes manifest. So that sheds some further light on Shiva Tattva. So we can clearly see that Lord Krishna expands himself into innumerable forms, and equally so, it is mentioned in the Puranas, how Srimati Radharani is also expanding herself. Just she is known as Mahalakshmi, just as Lord Krishna expands himself as Mahavishnu. And then from this Mahalakshmi forms, so many expansions arise. And as Lord Krishna transforms in Tattva to Shiva Tattva, another Tattva, another category of being altogether, Srimati Radharani simultaneously also transforms into the form of Durga Devi. Thus, we can understand that everything has its origin in Lord Krishna and his eternal consort. Here in the material world, we see how every living being is controlled by the material energy. That material energy, manifesting itself in the three modes of material nature, is arranging endless varieties of circumstances. And the living being, who in the embodied state, is simply going through these motions of the three modes of material nature. The Vaishnava can see that everything is going on by the direction of the Supreme Lord. And this is the only thing that truly matters. Not so much the manifestations of the three modes of material nature, but rather the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind this material energy. Thus, we are again and again remembering that Lord Krishna is behind everything. And again, we tend to forget the same thing. Because somehow or other, the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord is so overwhelming that we forget. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is an interesting narration of Markandeya Rishi and how he had a desire. He was a great, powerful sage. He had a desire to see the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. So he was getting the opportunity to see this illusory energy at work. And he found himself at one point in a situation of pralaya, of great devastation. And there was an unlimited flood, and water began to rise and rise and rise. And somehow or other, everything was inundated. Everything. And Markandeya Rishi found himself in that inundation. And he was just, somehow or other, apparently the only living being that at least he didn't encounter any other one, wading through all that water, somehow or another, by his mystic power, he was able to stay afloat. But it was a great struggle, a great struggle. And then he saw a tree, and he saw a leaf, and on a banyan tree, and on the leaf he saw a small child sucking its toe, and that, of course, was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who puts his own toe in his mouth. And that is the amazing Supreme Lord. Why would the all-powerful Supreme Lord take the form of a child sucking its toe? Bewildering thing, thinking about it. God sucks his toe. What does he do? The illusion dissipated, and Markandeya Rishi was able to see the Supreme Lord again. But while he was in that water, it was so vast, it was so enormous, that it was just overpowering. And this is a fact. Even when we are in an ordinary ocean, it's too overpowering. A little wind, a few waves, too overpowering. So this material energy is too big, too large, too overpowering. That is our problem. It's just too overpowering what's happening to us. Just the things that come about. What nature cannot bring about, or what people can bring about. Wars. Too overpowering. The forces that are just being generated. So we are surrounded by great strength. There's the example of Oppenheimer, one of the scientists that was responsible for manufacturing the nuclear bomb, and who was an educated man, and who then quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, from the 11th chapter, about the universal form, showing its many faces and its all-destructive nature. He was right. They unleashed some of that destructive force. Of course, still, ekam senis ekam jagat, only a spark of my splendor, only an insignificant little spark of Krishna's unlimited energy. But this is the problem. This is why Maya is so strong, because it is Krishna's energy. And it is therefore so overpowering. We have no chance. There is no possibility to ever conquer Maya. Great, powerful yogis are exactly trying to do that. On their own strength, they are trying to gain the power. They are performing great austerity, and gradually
their power is becoming enormous. But even the most powerful of such mystic yogis can possibly transfer himself step by step to higher planetary systems and even go beyond the material realm into the realm of Vaikuntha. But such a yogi cannot remain there without the grace of the Supreme Lord. Again must come down. Only by the grace of the Supreme Lord can one find shelter. Therefore, the approach of a devotee is totally different. We simply turn to Krishna again and again. Our only hope is if we turn to Krishna. Therefore, kirtaniya sadahari, therefore to always chant, constantly. Because if we don't chant, we are at risk. Any moment, we can be struck by the material energy. Any moment, maya can hit us. And somehow or other, niketasta maya, tada japati ahaya. Srila Jagannatha Pandit is making that point in Prema Vivarta. Maya is waiting nearby, ready to slap us down. One moment of inattentiveness, sureshchidara, is like shaving. Right? One moment, no attention.
So, if we are in getting involved with the material energy, we must be very careful. Because the power of that material energy is much greater than we are. One interesting point is found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila chapter 19, where basically we find a description of the Bhakti Lata Beach, the seat of the creeper of bhakti, and how one must water that seat with Sravana Kirtana Jala Sechana, we water it with hearing and chanting, and then it grows up. But it says that along with the bhakti creeper, there are other creepers growing. And this is the point of interest that I want to present, is that when we are dealing with the material energy, we think, well, it's not so bad, I'm not a kid, I'm not new, in spiritual life also, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I mean, I know how to not take it too far. You know what I mean? I'm careful, but also not fanatic. I mean, I live in this world, I have to be human. I am what I am, what can I do? And, you know, yes, I want to be a Vaishnava, but I'm also in this human body, and I live in a human society, and it's just impossible to live like a total outcast, like totally alienated from everyone. I have to be also a little bit part of this world. And, well, there are many good things out there, and there's a lot we can learn from a lot of people, and so on. So this kind of reasoning is there. I think, well, so, but I know what I'm doing. I'm not going too far. I'm not taking it over the edge, we think. Yes, but Mali Lila chapter 19 speaks about the dynamics of the seed. And that's interesting, that we take in some seeds, and that the seeds itself then start growing. And this is an interesting dynamics of Maya. That there are seeds of Maya that unknowingly or very insignificantly enter. Only tiny little seeds. Nothing. But then they grow into creepers. So this is interesting. Interesting how it works. And how such creepers can grow up along with our devotional creeper. And thus, the contamination can go deeper than we think, actually. It's more tricky than we think. We think that, well, it's only a comic book. But maybe it's not only a comic book. Maybe it's a seed. And maybe that seed will grow into something completely different, because maybe it creates a little crack, a little opening that later on becomes much bigger and allows so much more Maya to enter. So just see how one must be on guard, one must be careful with the illusory energy. Maya is very powerful, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that Maya is not only outside of us with temptations. If that was the only problem, that would be relatively simple. We could build walls and keep a distance. But Maya is not only outside of us. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, just as during a war, the enemy is not only on the opposing side, no, the enemy is infiltrated with spies in our own rank, and they sabotage from within. So this is the problem with Maya, that Maya is also within, and it is the Maya within that makes us especially weak. It is there where we have a problem. So in our fight with Maya, it's not only that we are dealing with temptations from the outside, but we're dealing with Maya that has already rooted itself deeply within our mind. And therefore, we are constantly hankering for material enjoyment. Thus, the battle is already half lost, so to speak. Half lost already. This is the situation. Therefore, we need to place ourselves in a safe situation. Thus, everyone must be in an ashram. Ashram is required for those who are influenced by Maya. Giriraj Das Brahmachari at the time once told Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, sometimes we are in Maya." Prabhupada said, "What do you mean, sometimes you're in Maya? You're always in Maya." That was also nice. So, those who are in Maya need to situate themselves in an ashram. They need shelter. So, this ashram provides us a certain code, a certain culture, both. It provides us with certain restrictions, but it also provides us with a culture of positive activities that we can engage in within the ashram. So that shelter will help us to overcome this Maya within us. And then we'd better look for purification as much as we can get. There is an urgent need because there is fire in the house, so to speak. We have to put it out. It can't wait. When Maya has infiltrated within, we need purification. So this is then our next meditation. So it's not just a matter of avoiding the temptations of Maya. It is also a matter of actively looking for purification. Otherwise, we are at risk. We are certainly at risk. And one should not underestimate. Sometimes we think that, who was I in my last life? Some devotees, they go through hypnotic regression. Personally, I don't like those things. So don't try it on me. Anyone is a self-professed hypnotizer, no thanks. But some people are very curious and they're into this, and they go on a special hypnotic table and get regressed to previous lives. The funny thing is that usually they were kings and queens. So,
maybe somewhere in Orissa, or you know, some other exotic Vaishnava place. And then, unfortunately, they made this small offense somewhere, and then they had to again take birth, and here they came. And
there's the
Bhakta. They just walked straight in somewhere in the west. Yes.
It's amazing. The same with these scrolls, you know. I mean, I've heard about the Bhrigu readers, but I've never heard about anyone who, according to Bhrigu, was a dog in his last life. And I'm always waiting for that. Some dog in some Vaishnava walked past and threw a little, you know, a cookie or whatever, and that did it, right? Whatever. Some, at least something low class, you know. But somehow or other, all the Bhrigu scrolls, everyone is always something aristocratic or very devotional, or a Brahma, a Kshatriya, or something. Or at least a pious Vaishya. Anyway, leaving my suspicion aside, so going back to previous lives, well, imagine we were devotees in our last life. Just imagine it would have been. Then we blew it. That's the point. Then we blew it. And maybe we blew it many times. And maybe we're just blowing it again. Maybe we're already doing it right now, blowing the opportunity. Srila Prabhupada so painstakingly arranged everything. But I have to have this mustache. I have to have it. Although he said we shouldn't have, but he had. So, like that, you know, whatever may be, we have to stretch. We have to stretch. Somehow it's too narrow. Oh, stretch it a little. Oh, chocolate. Right? A million times chocolate katana. Let's talk about chocolate. Yes. Anyway, yeah, come back in a chocolate factory. Yeah? I mean, if you're really that attached, if it's all about chocolate, then, you know, work one lifetime as a devotee, and some sort of a devotee in a chocolate factory. Yeah? I mean, chocolate, how I love you. So, all these things, stretching the limits, and then stretching it further. And of course, if you keep on stretching, where do you get? You get to the edge. You really get to the edge of the deep end, if you know what I mean. And then it is just one little fraction, and there you go. Cartoon crash, something like that. The spiritual life does resemble the crash in a cartoon where you sort of make a hole in the ground and you climb back out, because you do get a chance. There is no such thing as eternal damnation. So no matter how deep the hole is that we dig for ourselves, eventually you can climb back out. Yes, you can. But still, it doesn't look very attractive if you think about these cartoons. It's nice when someone else is falling, but when we ourselves are the falling party, I don't know. Not so much my program. So thinking about all these descriptions, I'm thinking that we are looking here at the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. We are looking here how it works, the material world. And we are looking at especially the ghastly feature of the material energy. Oh yes, many times it's sweet. But then sometimes it just turns into a nightmare. That's when Kali is at work. Going strong. So, keeping all this in mind, this particular session of the Bhagavatam is not about Lord Shiva. This particular section in Bhagavatam is about devotional service to Krishna. And right now, today, it's warning us, do not get bewildered by the temporary beauty in this material world. Remember how ghastly it can become. And therefore, by all means, turn to Krishna. See how Lord Shiva himself is, although married to Maya, that should be difficult, if you consider it. That's probably a tough marriage for a devotee. I mean, Lord Shiva is a devotee and he's married to Maya. Well, imagine you have to go through that. But somehow or other, Lord Shiva manages to not become bewildered. So, therefore, we are following Lord Shiva. He's a little austere. He doesn't get too much entangled. He keeps it simple in his life and focuses in meditation on the Supreme Lord. In our case, Lord Shiva is referred to here as one of the 12 Mahajans, and Mahajan-yeni-gata-sapanta. We are following the footsteps of the Mahajan. So my statements that Lord Shiva is our role model is not just a concoction, but rather something directly established in the scriptures. So, as such, directly established in Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, 6th canto, this verse about the Mahajans. Thus, we are also trying to remain free from entanglement as much as possible. A last example. Sometimes the Grihastha ashram has been compared to a well, right? The Andhakupa, the blind, dark well. So I thought about that when I myself entered into the Grihastha ashram, and I was thinking that there are some who are really going for it and who say, okay, let's go for the well, and we go 1, 2, 3, head down, straight for the bottom. But wells also have, mostly for maintenance purpose, some brackets in the wall which function as a ladder. So one could also step by step go down. And there's really no need to see how deep it really is. How deep can we go? It's not absolutely necessary. Therefore, even within the Grihastha ashram, one can still consider, well, how far to take this? How far to stretch the limits? Because the purpose of the ashram, the purpose of all ashrams, is to go back to Godhead this lifetime. So wherever we live, whatever we do, wherever we are comfortable, that's individual. Yeah. Everyone chooses an ashram where he's comfortable. Yeah. I took sannyas because it's comfortable. But people don't know. But it is. It's the most comfortable ashram there is. Poor Vyasas. They have to slave and suffer. And we got the easy life, only fun, right? Anyway, leaving that aside, Bhagavatam class is not for advertisements, so I should wrap it up in a conclusion. Whatever we like, wherever we're comfortable, let's just go back to Godhead. Why not? Why? Because, for one reason, because Srila Prabhupada desired it so much. And really, gave what he called gallons of blood for that purpose. So just for his sake, maybe we should go back to God, even if we are not so sure. All right, let's stop and wait for comments and questions.
Maharaj, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Shiva Sampradaya, and how today this is in the Vallabha, this is the form of the Shiva Sampradaya today. So I don't know too much about Vallabha Sampradaya, but I was wondering if they, how they deal with the concern that Prabhupada says many worshippers of Shiva worship Shiva and Durga for material gain. So Shiva is the founder of their sampradaya, but he's, you know, he's worshiping, they're worshiping Krishna in the Vallabha sampradaya. Do they, I was wondering if they, maybe you know, they get, do they get into material gain, or are they really good Vaishnavas, or how does it work? Do they disregard Shiva as a source of material opulence?
It's a difficult question. It's a very specialized question as to how they really conduct themselves in worship.
The only one Shiva. I know is that Murari, Samati Murariji, that we gave Prabhupada the passage on the day. It's the only one I know.
No, I mean, we know quite a bit about the Vallabha Sampradaya, and we know that they are, in general, strict in strict Vaishnavas. I don't, for example, in Nathdwar, I don't recall any form of demigod worship in the temple at all. So the impression is that they indeed have Krishna as their worshipable Lord. But, okay, I haven't read an exhaustive study on, you know, trade relationships, so it's a bit much to make such a sweeping statement.
Different question, Maharaj. You made a great number of points, which is very, very nice plan. Let me try to address some of your statements. You said alongside the devotional paper, other seeds are maybe cultivated, and contamination may be deeper than we think. You said even the battle is already half lost. But surely a little new age never hurt anybody. I mean, are you seriously suggesting that there are cases of aspiring Vaishnavas who could be misled by some kind of other? Is that what we're preventing?
I'm going to try. Did you refer? Who referred to the point about the seeds that are of Maya or of material contamination that grow alongside with our Bhakti creeper. Also that point about the infiltration of Maya within and not only being on the outside, and then my statement that the battle was already half lost, and then he said something like, but surely
A little new age never harmed anyone,
right?
Or are there instances that devotees have been misled? I can't think of any.
Other instances that devotees have been misled. Well, I think I know devotees that became Buddhists. I know devotees that became Christians.
The
devotee became many things. A little new age, when we speak about hypnotic regression.
I mean, I'm bundling all these things.
That's it. And I made a statement about hypnotic regression that some devotees are doing. And, I'm not saying that it is absolutely 100% impossible to engage such things in the service of Krishna. I'm not saying that. But it's not a very reliable thing in the first place. The problem with New Age is that its authority is questionable. That is the big
the New Age in itself is, well, I guess New Age started with this concept of this is the age of Aquarius, right? The harmony and understanding and all that. I got it from the musical Hair. I don't know where others got it from. But I guess it started somewhere there, this New Age, the age of Aquarius. And with that, we find a lot of people reaching back to ancient traditions and a lot of the lost knowledge which we have in this modern technological society. So interest in herbs, interest in all kinds of mystic powers and the powers of nature, unleashing your own natural potential. And a lot of that came up under the moniker of New Age. These things are close to our tradition, which is also an ancient tradition and also has such elements within it. What can we say? We see that karma, yoga, and jnana are not emphasized as to be pursued by our acharyas, ultimately, only bhakti. So, I don't think we should make it our goal. At the same time, we are in the material world and we have to use something. We have to use some things. That's inevitable. And either you're going to use the uber karma products of the modern technological world, or you're going to use something alternative. And oftentimes the alternative things appear nicer. And I'd rather try golden seal than immediately throw a lot of antibiotics, for example. So my statement was not like a blanket statement against anything coming from New Age origin. It has its application. I have experience with Reiki. I have Reiki 2. I'm not a master, but I have 2. And I got it in the days when I was injured. And I was injured in the stomach and in the hospital. And what's this called again? Esophagus, yes. The esophagus was vibrating like anything. It was too much. The doctor said, there's nothing we can do, you just have to tolerate. I was going crazy. Then some Reiki master came, and lo and behold, within minutes, everything peaceful. Wow. I was a believer. So I got the Reiki, and I made chi balls and everything, and they work. But when I saw some 2 years after that in a temple, a devotee doing japa with 2 hands on his chest. There was one of those small temples where when you walk, you go in circles around Tulsi, and I walked around. And at the 10th circle, I couldn't tolerate it anymore, and I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm balancing my chakras. I thought that then he was getting a bit distracted from the real thing, and that he sort of was missing the point right there and then. And I think that Srila Prabhupada often said, this is not required. So, I think that when it comes to New Age, there is a lot of that. We're not going to argue whether it's good or bad, it's not required. And that, I like that, that answer of Srila Prabhupada, it's not required. So there's a lot of stuff out there. And it's not necessarily totally bad, but you slowly become attached to it, and then it opens up the door. Another way to compare the seat is like opening a door, and there's a whole landscape behind it. You start with Reiki, but then, do you know that if you go for a cosmic alignment,
that it is 100 times stronger than Reiki. Did you know that? You didn't, smile.
Just doing karmic cleansing.
But if you get your cosmic alignment done, 100 times more powerful than Reiki. There you go. And it's not expensive, a few $100. And I actually know the guy who does it. An American, somehow or other, of course American, came across and discovered the whole thing. If you're interested, just let me know. Great. I'll show you the website.
Not required.
Not required.
She doesn't want to be aligned
with this cosmos. She doesn't want to be aligned. But then you might be walking crooked in your old age with a stick and your nose on the ground. Yeah. Instead of 80, it's still straight. So you surely don't want to be aligned. Why not? Be healthy, be fit, be strong, and engage in Krishna's service.
speaking about 100 times stronger, isn't it? Vishnu, Ram, and Krishna, the names are like 100 times. What is 100 times?
Yes. Yes, it of course says in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam that this chanting of Hare Krishna, this Harinam Sankirtana, is Jagan Mangalan Asana. It is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Yeah. So, cosmic alignment maybe 100 times more powerful than Reiki, but the most powerful is still chanting Hare Krishna. Okay. Anyway, lots of fun. Thank you so much.